So guess the C word.
Christmas?
Or?
COVID?
Yep, bingo. One of those.
Well, it's good to see you've got your face mask on. Even though I'm in Trowbridge and you're in Shrewton.
Yeah, but you can never be too sure.
Yeah, don't spread it over that video screen.
And my Santa hat, which
Yeah.
this will be the first and last time this year. Actually, I'm going to take this mask off now. Oh God, I can't. Stuck. That's it. Yeah, as you know, my son has tested positive for COVID, so he's locked in his room and sort of doing room service for him, delivering his food and stuff.
Oh dear.
So we're just keeping it well away, and we're sort of wearing face masks around the house, and he is. And but what a time to get it.
Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. We are up to number 26 and we are in the week before Christmas, which means actually that we have been doing this podcast for a whole year. More on that in a moment. My name is Glyn Coy and this morning I'm channeling my inner Barry White because I don't have COVID, but I do have a cold. That's been confirmed by multiple negative lateral flow tests, but I will persevere and struggle on. And my podcasting partner this week, as always, is.
Your little elf, Paul Timlett, who is also suffering from a cold and not COVID, as my three negative tests have proved.
Bah humbug, as they
Oh,
say.
God, ho bloody
As
ho,
they
yeah.
say.
As we were saying earlier, if nobody had ever heard of COVID, you'd think, well, I've just got a cold. But of course, we all fear the worst now. And so, anyway,
Yeah.
didn't do any harm to be cautious.
No, exactly. So we are doing our best to social distance here.
Yeah, you're in Trowbridge, I'm in
Yeah, that's about
Shrewton.
as distant as we can possibly get,
That's pretty
and by the miracles of modern technology, we're able to still do these podcasts.
good.
So, as normal, we go over the last 2 weeks in Wiltshire.
Well, I learned to drive a tractor. Spent 2 days on a tractor driving course, which was very exciting. Up at Parsonage Down, so they want us to be a bit more sort of independent and not have to have instructors with us all the time. Not instructors, but management with us. So they want us to
So
go out around the farm.
did the tractor survive without you breaking it?
Yeah, probably better than the Land Rover I drove when I had to go on a 4x4 driver training
Hmm.
course, which I think I mentioned. I drove it all the way to Cirencester with the diff lock on, which is not good. But it did survive. The tractor survived. A few other things didn't. A few hay bales got run over, but we managed to avoid knocking over any barns and stuff. I tell you what, I knew the principle behind reversing a trailer, and this is a damn big trailer. It's sort of however many, four wheels and a big tipper thing, and trying to reverse it around a farmyard. And I knew the principles about sort of steering it the opposite way that you want it to go, and then into the turn, so it's completely counterintuitive. But even though you know what the theory is, actually doing it, you just can't help yourself. And it was quite hilarious because it was again sort of being COVID safe. We had one instructor and four students, and we had one tractor between us, so there was a lot of standing around watching other people. Trying to maneuver this thing around, and it was hilarious. We did get ourselves in the right mess.
Seeing people try to engage brain and it just isn't
Yeah,
working.
yeah. But I tell you what, I mean, our tractor up there, it's a John Deere, and it's not that old, but it's certainly not new by any stretch of the imagination. But it's like the flight deck of an aeroplane. You've never seen so many, computer screens and levers, and just. Start with, it's got four pedals, so we're all used to three pedals on a car. This one's got four. you've got three different ways of accelerating and slowing down. I think there were five different levers for working the hydraulics, the five ranges of gears, each one with four gears in it, so you've got 20 gears. I mean, it's just mind-bending, this thing. But the terrifying thing is there's a million ways to kill yourself with a tractor. They're really quite dangerous pieces of kit. Joking aside, I mean, the old safety thing was a major part of the 2 days. But it was good fun, and managed not to kill any livestock, which is always a good thing.
Brilliant. So good to hear you've been doing your best to imitate Farmer Giles and razz his tractor around the fields of
tractor. What's that thing that kids broke? Is it Tractor Ted or whatever? Is it Tractor Ted?
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
So the other thing that happened on the 10th was we launched the new Hidden Wiltshire book. And actually, we've been taking orders for it since the start of the month, and they've been flying out the door. Although at the moment, Royal Mail is doing its best to annoy us by not getting books to the right place at the right time. But that's another story. But we did get the book launch done, and we had the event at Devizes Museum, Wiltshire Museum in Devizes, which was really good. Really good evening.
COVID again had an impact, so the museum was pretty restricted on the numbers that we could have. It was hardly a packed hall, but I really enjoyed it. Really nice bunch of people turned up, and we just blathered for about an hour, didn't we?
And we did. And a few people didn't turn up who'd got tickets, but given the issues that have been arising that week with the spread of COVID, that's completely understandable. But we just managed to get it done. But I tell you what, though, Paul, I've decided that for Hidden Wiltshire Book 3, I am definitely not doing a Christmas launch again. The reality is, at the moment, we seem to have a COVID outbreak every Christmas, which doesn't help. Royal Mail's all over the place at the moment, but to be fair, they're inundated with sending out tests and all sorts, so they can be forgiven for that. Yeah, I just think it would be a nicer thing to do in the summer next time around, but I'll park that thought for now.
But to be fair to Royal Mail, it doesn't help when we put the wrong postage on the parcels. So
no.
We weren't paying enough.
My scales are obviously ready to be put into the bin because they put the wrong weights on the parcels. So people were getting this nice message saying you need to pay an extra £1.50, which was a bit embarrassing. So if you're one of those people and you're listening, it's humble apologies for that. And if you have ordered one and it hasn't arrived yet and you're concerned about it, just drop us a mail. We'll sort something out. It's no problem. I suspect in the future I'm going to be driving these myself to post through people's doors at this rate.
Bearing in mind three of them went to Canada, that could be a long trip.
But they did get there.
They did get there, yes.
Because I paid the right postage and had tracking on that. They actually took a week. I posted them on the Friday and they arrived at their door the following Friday. I posted some in Wiltshire and it's 2 weeks later and they haven't got there.
Yeah, that's right. They haven't got to Sussex in 2 weeks. Mind you, I've had one order sitting here and it's only going at the end of the road and it's still not delivered. It's a week later. It's still sitting here. The guy said he was going to pick it up. But
I actually delivered one the other day to a very nice gentleman called Nigel Elms in Eddington. We had a good chat, actually, as I delivered his book. But he was telling me that he'd found Hidden Wiltshire through the library. He'd found the first book in Westbury Library and he'd just moved to Wiltshire, and it was a good resource for him to get to know his way around the county. And he follows the website and has listened to the old podcast and was very appreciative of what we'd done. So very pleased to hand that book over to him the other day.
There's been some sort of lovely stories recently. I know I think we talked about it last time, didn't we? But the sort of people that have been in touch with us over the book and the podcast, so it's really nice to get some feedback, and I think that's one thing that the book has really helped with is prompting people to get in touch. You know, people sending us emails and messages, it does help, because most of the time we just think we're talking to ourselves.
Yeah, and the other thing is one nice email from someone gave us a suggestion for another place to visit, and that's always welcome. If anyone listens to this and has some areas of Wiltshire they'd like us to go and take a look at that I think we would appreciate, always happy to do that, and very happy to get suggestions. So do send us a mail.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about it a bit later on future walks, but you know, there's still a huge amount to go at.
Yeah, definitely.
But it does take quite a lot of time plotting the routes and stuff. So if people have got routes that they already, you know, favourite routes, favourite walks, then certainly save us some time in planning all these things, and by all means, let us have them.
Yeah, yeah. And as always as well, if anyone's interested in contributing to the website, and would be interested in writing something for that, I mean, have a look at it, and so you can get a feel for the style and the type of things that we do. And we've had a few contributors over the years, and they've all been welcome. So yeah, that's another thing that you could possibly help out with.
Yeah, definitely. There could be another Steve Dewey out there.
There could, yeah, yeah. So the other thing that happened is I got an email out of the blue from someone from the British Library, who was interested in, well, he was from the sound side of the fence.
No, it was National Archive.
Yeah, but it's not, a.
Oh, is it British Library?
Yeah, it's part of the British Library. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll just drag up the email. But what it was, they contacted me and said, would we be interested in adding our podcast to the National Sound Archive? And I was like, I didn't even know they archive podcasts. I thought it was like they just took music recordings and things like that. But yeah, I was quite surprised at that and quite excited about it. So
I wasn't.
You didn't tell me, did you, that you prompted this?
Well, I didn't prompt it. It was my brother.
Right.
Having ordered a book, which still hasn't turned up 2 weeks later. But it came about because he went to school with a guy who works in the National Archive, and he had a beer with him in the week. And my brother was telling this guy, Steve Cleary, about our podcast. And he sort of perked up and said, oh, he said, we might be interested in putting that in the National Archive. I'll talk to the podcast guys. And that was, I don't know, one evening this week, he told me. And so my brother contacted me and said, look, would you be interested? And I said, well, yeah, of course we would. You know, he said, well, I'll find out some more. And that's why I didn't say anything, because I thought, well, this will be, I mean, months before anything happens. And then the next day they emailed you.
Yeah, they did. And actually, what he said is, the gentleman emailed me, said that he worked alongside the sound curators at the British Library Sound Archive, formerly the National Sound Archive. So yeah, they archive recordings that are of significance to the country and deserve to be preserved for future generations. So long after we've
the country.
Long after we've passed on, people will be able to visit our inane ramblings.
Well, I did have sort of, well, I had two images immediately popped into my head. But was one that, you know, we'd be locked in a vault somewhere in the National Archive, and we'd be down there for hundreds of years gathering dust. But,
you know, though, you can just imagine, we're very into archaeologists and things like that. They're digging up the past. You can just imagine the future of archaeology. Digging out hidden Wiltshire podcasts. And
yeah, two mummified bodies in the basement.
Yeah.
with little labels stamped on on our foreheads, podcasters.
Yeah, they'll be saying, listen to these two prats from the past. I mean, goodness me.
But the other image that jumped into my head was that they would fire us into outer space to be discovered by aliens in about a million light years time.
This is our podcast is representative of the ordinary man in Wiltshire.
Yes, or of the human race. I mean, God forbid, you know, they think that's no wonder the human race died out. Listen to this.
I know, and we finished them off. But yeah, that was interesting, I have to say.
But you might want to share your story about the other story about the British Library in the book that you told me.
Oh my goodness!
I couldn't believe that.
I can't say that. I might get arrested.
Hang on, which story are you thinking about? Oh yeah, yes.
So I just got, yeah, having produced a book, I was reading an article online about self-publishing, and it made the point that by law, anyone that publishes a book, whether it's through a publisher or a self-published, you have to deposit a copy of the book with the British Library. And that's just, it's a law that's been in place since, I don't know, 1662 or something. And you can get a court order against you if you don't do it. So, and the other thing is, I discovered there are 5 other libraries in the country of national significance, like the Ashmolean and the Welsh Library and Scottish Library. They're entitled to ask for a copy too. So, but and the worst, they don't pay
the worst,
for it either.
That's the worst thing. They don't pay for it. We have to pay for it.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to have to look into getting some advice on that, because obviously I'd like to do the right thing, but supplying 6 books free of charge when you're self-publishing is a little bit rich.
Well, as I said to you, they can come and blimmin' arrest me. I'm not paying for that. I'm happy to wait 400 years till they turn up to arrest me.
Well, the thing is, it got me worried, because I've published the first book about 3 years ago and I haven't sent a copy of that in either. And you're supposed to send it in within 1 month of publication. So we're going to get...
you're buggered, mate. I know where you're spending Christmas.
I'm going to be in Wormwood Scrubs.
Not before time.
Oh, I don't know. Right, enough of this nonsense. Should we get on with the main podcast bit?
Yeah.
Okay, so instead of having a topic of something Wiltshire-y, well, I guess this is still a Wiltshire topic, but instead of having a topic about a walk we've done or a location or something like that, I thought we'd spend this doing a bit of a Christmas special, doing a wrap-up of the last year, really, and focus in on some of the things that we discovered that were of interest and all the fun we've had along the way, discovering new things, and maybe think then at the end about what we're going to do in the next year. So, yeah, the podcast started.
Yeah, the fascinating thing really was the analytics. We can see sort of not who's listened, but from where people tune in from. And that's been a real eye-opener, isn't it?
It has.
It's not just Wiltshire.
No, it's not. And that's the funny thing is, because this podcast is very niche. It's Wiltshire in it, but it's hidden Wiltshire. It's not a mainstream podcast, and we know that. But we still have, having said that, even though we know that and it's niche, it gets a lot of followers. And we've had thousands of listens over the last year, which is quite surprising in itself to me, because I didn't expect that many. But yeah, where people tune in from is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So I'll go through some of the analytics, because I think people would find this quite interesting. If I look at the countries, the number of countries that people listen from, it lists the top 20. So there may be even more beyond this. And some of them are absolutely really amazing. But I mean, obviously, most listeners are in the UK, but it's only 91%. So 9% are overseas. And the next most popular country to listen to us is the United States. Mm-hmm. So I assume we've got loads of expats over there, or people with links to Wiltshire that like to listen along.
Well, I think there's that, but obviously you and I both sort of post to Instagram, and so every time a podcast comes out, then we put that on our respective Instagram feeds. And I mean, you've got a lot more followers than I do, but I do have sort of people who follow me on Instagram from all over the world, and quite a few in the States. So, you know, I'll put a link to the podcast in my bio on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of, and there's one or two that I've seen from the analytics. Think, oh, that's so and so from, like, you know, West Virginia or wherever. So I do wonder how many listens are prompted by social media feeds, because you're very active on Twitter. Wonder how many we sort of pick up that way.
Yeah, and I guess we'll never know where they find it from. But social media obviously plays a big part in that, because between the two of us, we've got quite a wide spread.
Mm.
And it is a wide geographic spread. But even so, it's a bit of a thing to kind of just see a post on social media and then take the effort to tune into the podcast and listen. I'll go through the top 10. So, yeah, I said UK, United States, we know about English-speaking countries. Number three, bizarrely, is the Netherlands. But then again, I know there's quite a few British expats out there.
Yeah.
Canada, English speaking, and we know we've got listeners in Canada, and I've sent books to Canada, so we know about that. I've got a brother who lives in Canada as well, so that might be something to do with it. Brazil. Who on earth listens from Brazil?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I don't know anybody there. I don't know anybody's gone on holiday there even. So.
No. Australia. I guess, yeah, we've got expats. I know that. I've got followers on Twitter who originally from Wiltshire, who live in Australia now. That's understandable. Czech Republic, though. Not so sure about that.
No.
And Montenegro, number 8.
Do you know where it is? Where's Montenegro, for God's sake?
Malta's coming in at number 9.
Followed
swiftly by Luxembourg at number 10.
Nil point.
Yeah, no, I won't go on to all of them, but I mean, just going down the list, we've got followers in India, Japan. Who listens from Japan? Saudi Arabia and Hong Kong. Goodness me, I don't know. But they're all welcome, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting year for us. I mean, I remember when we kicked this podcast off, we had a bit of media coverage at the time as well. I don't know if you remember, we were in the Wiltshire Times.
Yeah.
We had a 2-page spread, even had our faces in it. And we're on BBC.
And people still listen.
I know. Well, they didn't listen for too long, because it was quite funny, because we were on BBC Radio Wiltshire a few times. They kept replaying this interview I did. And we were in the Wiltshire Times, and there was quite a bit of buzz around it. So for the first podcast, we had loads of listeners. And we thought, yes, we've arrived.
Yeah.
And about the next podcast, number 2, about half of them had buggered off. Yeah. So
it went off a cliff.
So we haven't been able to maintain those initial listening figures from the start, but actually they've been very consistent over the year, so we know that we've now got a hardcore audience that does tune in on a regular basis.
Because you said earlier about having we've had a few thousand listens, but I mean I haven't looked lately, but it can't be far off 10,000 now.
Yes, it's around 10,000.
Is it? Wow. Yeah. God. That's frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. This is amazing. And the listening stats across all the podcasts have been very consistent, so people do keep coming back. And that's great, because it means that we have a reason to continue, and then we will continue this.
Mm.
You've already said that we can now consider ourselves true podcasters.
Yeah.
Because we've done more than 7.
Done more than 7.
Well, I tell you what, though. When we first started, I think we were wondering how we would find enough things to talk about, but we did. And we found new things along the way, so... I discovered new places this year, which I'd never been to before, and some of them, having visited them, threw up some really fascinating bits of history. And one thing that comes to mind for me is the Fonthill Estate.
Mm.
So I'd found that walk on the Visit Wiltshire website, and I'd had it in the back of my mind. I'd never really visited there, so I went and did it, and I really enjoyed the walk. It's a bit of a strange place, that Fonthill area, because it's all very manicured, isn't it? It's not like going on Salisbury Plain or something. It's... you know, very, very well kept. And it's huge. It goes all the way from Fonthill Lake and around there, all the way up to Great Ridge. It's massive. But for me, it was finding out the history of William Beckford that fascinated me. And I think you'd done some digging and discovered that this man had, we called the podcast, I think it was Fonthill Estate and the Gold-Suited Doorman.
Yeah.
Which throws up a few questions.
Dormer or dwarf or whatever, yeah. But it's William Beckford was an absolute nutter.
Yeah.
He kind of like projecting forward into the current sort of times, and you think what sort of press coverage this man would get. But yeah, because he, I mean, we talked about him at the book launch, didn't we? And how he sort of was caught, spied through a keyhole, basically indulging in things he shouldn't have been indulging with I think an 18-year-old boy, and who was the son of, who was it he was caught with?
I can't remember who it was, but he was someone.
Some aristocracy.
Aristocrat who was well connected.
Yeah. Anyway, he was caught, despite having sort of wife and kids, and Beckford was, you know, this was great shock, you know, societal shock. And
I think this guy, he wrote a letter to the Times or something, so it was all plastered across the newspapers, so there was a lot of chattering about his scandal.
But he scarpered, didn't he? He left the country, and I can't remember if his wife and children went with him. But
yeah, his wife went with him.
Yeah.
And I think she had a baby.
That's right.
I think she died in childbirth.
Yes, I think you're right. But he managed to collect another young man on his travels, together with this Spanish dwarf called Prero, who he brought them both home with him when he returned to.
Yeah,
to,
and Prero was a vagrant. He was on the streets of.
Who was he? I don't remember.
Yeah, he was a Spanish vagrant. Yeah. So he'd rescued this man from the streets, and brought him back.
Yeah.
To the UK. And just to put Beckford in context, he'd inherited a fortune as a young man, so never had to work again, and spent his life trying to spend this fortune, which was all built on the back of slavery.
Yeah.
Because it was from the plantations that they had in Jamaica, and he collected art and stuff like that, and was regarded as a pretty tasteless collector. He collected all sorts of old tat and rubbish, but actually has ended up being, some of it has been quite significant. And you can still see some of his stuff, because he, after he'd finished at Fonthill and moved to Bath, he built Beckford's Tower at Lansdowne, which is still there. You can go and visit it, and it contains what's left of his collection. I think it's been closed because of COVID, but it's one of those things that's worth having a look at. Fascinating history.
And it's, I mean, just on that theme of great characters, thinking about some of our other sort of favourite walks, and I think this next one is a favourite of both of us, was Folly Wood, and you could tell the story about how that came about. That came via you, didn't it?
It did. It came by me, because I'm a big fan of the Wiltshire artist David Alderslade, and I've got one of his paintings. I've bought a print of it. He painted a very colourful view of Bratton Camp from Pickett Hill, which is his style is quite exaggerated and colourful, but I thought it was perfect. And I'd gone onto his website and bought myself some coasters that look like that.
Well, that's really, really cool.
Nice, yeah, with his painting, sort of prints of his paintings on the coasters. And in the package that came from him, he'd handwritten a letter, which was cool, because getting a handwritten letter these days is such a rare thing.
Yeah, who does that?
And he said, you know, been enjoying listening to the podcast. Thanks for what you're doing. It's great. He said, I just wondered if you'd ever visited Folly Wood. And he said he'd painted it, and he said it's a really dramatic place. And he even included a printout of the Woodland Survey map to show where it was. So I talked to you about it. And before we'd had time to even plan anything, you'd already gone. You've gone over there and done a walk and got lost as well, and realised that the rights of way were all skew-if over there. And
footpath blocked, my favourite subject. That was, it was with Stu, wasn't it? Stu and I went and did that walk, and we got sort of blundering around in Folly Wood itself, which isn't open access and it's private and all that nonsense. But you're not supposed to go blundering around in there, but we did, because we couldn't find the path, which we subsequently found out had been blocked. I can't remember the order of events. So Stu and I went and did it, and I wrote it up. And I think you then went.
I went a few days later,
And then I went again after you. And that's when, you know, that's what made me think about this sort of, you know, amazing characters. When I bumped into the most incredible bloke, Mark Wellerhan, who is a sculptor, a poet, and a bit of a scallywag, I think. I mean, he's just a lovely, lovely bloke, and met him just down the track from Follywood. And what followed was one of the most entertaining 45 minutes of my life, I think, chatting to him. But the bizarre thing is that a chap posted a video, a YouTube video, which he shared on the Hidden Wiltshire site, and he, having sort of read about Follywood on our Facebook group and on the website, he went to have a look for himself, and he sort of put it on YouTube, and he also bumped into Mark Weller, and and more significantly his dog Crook, this giant dog, which is bigger than me. So I wonder whether Mark just sort of hangs around there waiting for encounters or what.
But doesn't he have a bit of land around there
though? Yeah, he does, yeah. Yeah, he owns a bit of land just between sort of there and, well, sort of vaguely Urchfont direction over yeah. there. And I think he just got a cabin, which I remember him saying to me that to get around some sort of planning laws, he sawed it in half, this cabin, because the size of it was too big to not have planning permission. So he just cut the thing in half. If you met Mark, you could see him doing it. It's just incredible. But, one of the sort of the incredible stories around there is I've forgotten his name now, Rawton, something Rawton, wasn't it, who is the headless horseman. Who
haunts the hollow.
Yes, who allegedly got very drunk one night and rode his driving his horse and carriage down the track that goes past Follywood and crashed it and broke his neck. Highly unlikely, because if he was... because this guy Rawton, is it Samuel Rawton? Doesn't matter. Anyway, he built this place called various names, but Folly. Wrote it down here, like Folly House or something like that, or Folly Castle. But the house was also called Maggot's Castle. All sorts of different names. Oh, here we are. Folly Castle, Maggot's Castle. Anyway, doesn't matter. So if he was that wealthy that he could build a big house somewhere in Folly Wood, because there's no sign of it now, then he wouldn't be driving his own carriage, would he? So
it was called... I'm just looking in the book, actually, because this is all in the book. Now available. from Wiltshire Museum Shop. And online from hiddenwiltshire.com. It was called Seymour Rawton.
Seymour, that's it, yeah.
And we've got a photo in the book of those hideously grotesque but quite alluring roots that descend down into the hollow.
Which was allegedly the site of his fatal accident.
Yeah.
And then there's just sort of being serious for a moment, there's a cave next to those roots, which is known as Holy Man's Cave, and
don't go in there.
Don't go in there if you're tempted by the video that this chap posted. I climbed up the bank to look in, and the moment I looked in, I thought, I'm not going in there. That's well dodgy. But the cave is also a roost for some quite rare bats, and of course it's an offence to go and disturb them. So just stay in the holloway, admire the cave from below. If you climb up and look in, there's nothing to see. Just don't go near it.
And avoid going there after dark.
Yes.
It's scary.
Yeah. Because it is allegedly haunted by a headless horseman.
So speaking of scary places, one of the things we did this year was do some outside broadcasting, which we'll start again in the new year. And actually, we're going to play a couple of clips, you know, now. I think one of the ones that was quite spooky was when we went inside Furze Knoll one evening. So I'll just play a little bit of that now.
Well, I can hear one bird.
Yes.
Not that many in here, no. Are there?
And there never are. You come up in the daytime, it's very, very...
They must know something.
Yeah. There's sort of a vibe about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a blackbird. That's pretty much all we can hear. But as we said in the blog, I mean, this is, again, it's part of a really ancient landscape.
Yes.
So we're looking now across, sort of through the trees in the direction of Avebury. And the landscape there is just everywhere you look. There's mounds, you know, long barrows, round barrows.
I believe there's a bowl barrow a couple of 100 yards over that direction.
That's right, yeah.
That was on the Historic England website. But yeah, that's very ancient. Of course, we've got the Wansdyke.
Yep.
Over in that direction over there.
Yeah, between us and Churhill.
Yeah.
Or Cheryl, sorry.
You see the monument there.
You can see the monument through the trees there, yeah. And the Wansdyke is between us and, and Cheryl. It's only about 100 metres across the field.
Yeah, about 100 metres away from here. So. Yeah. Wow.
And then you can see it. I think if we went to the edge of the copse, you'd be able to see it snaking all the way across to Milk Hill. Yeah, you can just about make it out.
Yeah.
Milk Hill and Knapp Hill. And
yeah, you can see the Downs over there.
In fact, there's a, you can see the heights, the hills, which it must be Milk Hill or Tan Hill. But it's noticeably higher than up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that high when you're up there. But this place does give me the creeps.
I'm not surprised.
In the evening, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure I'd want to spend a night up here.
So that was Spooky Firs Knoll, the place where no bird song is heard. Curious place.
Yeah, it's. I still wouldn't go in there when it's dark. Did your sons go or persuade you to go out there when it was dark?
No. I think they tried, and I said, you must be joking. No. I'm not going anywhere near that place in the dark.
Absolutely.
So a few places like that I've discovered in Wiltshire that I just won't go after dark. I think Follywood's one of them. Firs Knoll's another, and Robin Hood's Bower is the third.
Yeah.
You would not catch me there after dark.
No. Because Firs Knoll. I think, yeah, that's in the book, isn't it? That black and white photograph with all the birds.
It looks like something out of a Hitchcock movie.
Yeah. It was covered in fog and there was just crows flying across it. It's a weird place, a very spooky place. Another spooky place where we did an outside broadcast was up on the Fifield Down.
Mm.
And That was quite funny, actually. We're sort of getting towards the end of a fairly long evening's walk, and it was getting dark, wasn't it? And
yeah.
I seem to remember we were standing at the top of the Valley of the Stones and sort of looking down, and I think we were looking down at the Toadstone.
That's right, yeah.
And then at that moment, or around that moment, there were some rather disturbing sounds from behind us.
Yeah, let's play that clip now.
Right, so I've zoomed right in on the back of my camera. We're looking at this. And that, I mean, God,
that's a
toad, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a toad.
No, that's a cow.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cow. And that was
a sheep, wasn't it? Oh, no.
But, yeah, that's incredible. So, 2 out of 3. Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good.
Still good excuse to come back, though.
Well, there's just so many of them. You as we were walking down the hill, you were talking about how it's like a river, it's like a flow. The stones, this bottom of this valley that's just flowing all the way down there into what is called, what locally is known as the Valley of the Stones.
So we've stood just behind us. So we're looking kind of east, and behind us is Dilling Copse. And so if you're looking at a map, and then the stones, the Sarsens sort of accumulate in this sort of depression. Oh, there's a fox. We hear the fox barking in the wood behind us. That's in Dilling Copse. So the Sarsens sort of accumulate in this sort of depression and then sort of flow down into the Valley of the Stones. And the Valley of Stones is sort of this top end where the Toadstone is. It gets quite sort of steep-sided. So the stones all sort of accumulate, and it's just like they've been carried down by water, except it was over millennia as the last glaciers melted in the last ice age, and over thousands and thousands of years the rock debris, including the Sarsens, were carried down the what is known as the Valley of Stones. Remarkable place.
It honestly feels really wild,
especially with that fox.
Yeah, with that noisy animal behind us in the wood that's barking. But it's just all the field work is covered with stone, so it's not ploughed. There are loads of anthills and hawthorn and trees.
And the anthills are a sure sign of land that has just not been unimproved, is the technical term, unimproved land, never been ploughed. And these anthills have been here, some of them hundreds of years. Beautiful.
Gosh. So peaceful. All sorts of noises coming out of that wood.
You can hear another fox. There's one down there as well, down the valley. We're calling to each other. Hear it?
Yeah. I think as the light's disappearing, the area's been given over to the animals now.
Creatures of the night.
Creatures of the night.
But having... I've been up to Fifield Down a few times now. And of course, we did a walk, a guided walk for Wiltshire Museum up there. And David Dawson kindly came with us and brought his box of tricks with sort of various finds from up there. But I've just started reading, or in fact, I've nearly finished now, a book that I think we keep mentioning Alice Cambry on this the podcast, because she's a great source of information. And each time we put something on the Facebook page, she'll come up with some little gem that she's found, and she starts sort of digging away and doing a bit of research. But I think it was her that told us about a book called, says he, looking at the floor, where the book is, The Land of Lettuce Sweet Apple. And it's written by two archaeologists. I'm going to have to bend down and pick it up now. Hang on a sec. Peter Fowler and Ian Blackwell. And it's, although it's written by two archaeologists, it's not technical at all. And it's one of these sort of books where they really seek to sort of bring the landscape alive, going right back to sort of, I think, Mesolithic times, and then bringing it up to, well, I'm getting to the point where I think we're about in the 18th, 19th century. And it's sort of basically tracking what the landscape would have looked like in terms of human occupation over, you know, a period of about 5,000 years. And it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, we're not archaeologists, although we might pretend to know a bit about it, but I've learned so much by reading this book, and about how that, just that area of sort of Fifield Down, Overton Down, the villages of West Overton, East Overton, Lockeridge and Fifield, how they might have looked over a period of millennia, and where people lived and what they were doing. But, you know, they can hypothesise about these things, but then they go and, you know, do some excavations and seek to prove their hypotheses. But I hadn't realised the extent of the Roman occupation around there. And we're not talking about Roman towns. We're talking about, you know, maybe the odd house. And there are a couple of villas, sites of villas along there. And it just sort of really completely opened my eyes to what was really going on there, rather than just what, you know, we could guess at as we blunder around. And the other thing that I discovered from this book was that, I think we said on the podcast that we just played a clip from, or maybe it was another one, but I think I sort of talked about the Herapath up there, which is an old, it's a sort of Saxon, Anglo-Saxon name for a sort of military road, and there's some supposition that you know, King Alfred's troops had marched along the Herapath up there. But yeah, according to Fowler and Blackwell, it's not a Herapath at all, and that's a misnomer. And if you look on the OS map, it's the 1 to 25,000, it's actually called Green Lane or Herapath. But according to these guys, it absolutely was not a military road, it wasn't a Herapath, and it's just an ancient trackway. So just putting the record straight there, forget what I said before, it's not a Herapath.
But You wouldn't really know, would you? I mean, it's called the Harrowpath on the map, I think. So.
Well, that's the point. It's the map's wrong. The Ordnance Survey are wrong.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because we always, well, we seem to often treat the Ordnance Survey as the Bible.
I think we were going to play another bit of outside broadcast as well, weren't we? A snippet from when we met Andrew Zeminski.
Yes, over on the Coffin Trail.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's listen to that. So we're actually here outside the church at Steeple Ashton, which is a pretty impressive building, actually, just looking up at it. But we're actually here with a guest, a stonemason. Andrew Zeminski.
We're not just outside, we're on the roof.
And you're wearing full high vises and
and
PPE equipment
and
all that.
It's all been risk assessed, so we're all good.
Full health and safety briefing.
Yeah, we tick the box on the chit.
In case anybody's concerned.
But you're actually doing some work here, right?
That's right, yeah. We've got a rather full package of works here. We're repairing the hunky punks and the grotesques that some people know as gargoyles.
Yeah.
But I know gargoyles are not grotesques. Gargoyles are for spreading water out. It comes from the French to gargle.
Yeah.
So we've just repaired all those, and they really are magnificent. I mean, you've had a good look and you understand what they're about. But the scale of them is so extraordinary, and the artistic achievement of them, which you can't really see from the ground, it really is something to be seen, isn't it?
We're
very lucky to be up here on the roof, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We've looked out there, really. You wrote a book a year or so ago, didn't you? The Stonemason.
Yeah.
Which I've read, and I really enjoyed it.
Someone read it?
Yeah.
Really? Thanks very much, yeah.
But I noticed one thing you mentioned in there is when you talk about dust is you try to work a sarsen stone like the builders at Stonehenge did, and I think I've read somewhere you said that the silica dust from that would have killed them within a year or two of them fashioning the stones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky really that the dust that this produces is just limestone dust. There's no silica in it at all.
Yeah.
So it's actually, even though I'm standing here having a good old-fashioned cough, you know, I've got wonderful fingernails because the lime's calcium and it's just good for you.
Yeah.
And we never get colds. We never get the flu.
Yeah.
It has quite high astringent qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're working outdoors all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sarsen I got to recreate the Stanley stone, just as a purely experimental sort of piece. Yeah. As soon as I started pounding away with these spherical balls called mauls, in the same fashion as the early Bronze Age folk did when they were creating the monument. Just the amount of dust that was being created was astonishing. And if you're breathing this in, your lungs are going to start bleeding very, very quickly.
Even if you're doing it outside. You're
literally within months. Yeah. And I think if there are whole family communities, you know, like the stones at Stonehenge weren't just pulled out of the ground and put up. They were dressed, they were given corners, they were given flat faces. You know, it's a terrifically huge undertaking. And the people who were involved would have been dead very, very quickly. There's no face masks then.
I think you said sarsen stone is pretty hard. It's tough.
This limestone here is like a cake.
And
sarsen is. I knew this old boy sarsen cutter, and he referred to it as the hardest stone known to man.
And
he's bloody right as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such unforgiving stuff.
Yeah.
It was interesting, really, your comment about the fact that, you know, the people who carved the stones, you know, who made Stonehenge would have been, you know, master craftsmen of their time. And where did they all go to afterwards? Oh. They finished that. And as you said, they all died.
That's the great question. Why are there no more stone? You know, it was a terrific capital undertaking to create this monument in stages, but, you know, to actually getting it to site, because everything came from Westwoods.
Yeah.
They've recently discovered just outside,
near Marlborough.
South of the A4 near Marlborough. So I think they transported the sarsens by the easiest route, and that would have been by water.
Right.
And fortuitously, the River Avon flows from north to south pretty directly from the area of the Marlborough Downs to Salisbury Plain.
Yeah.
So there's no way they would not have used You know, this image of savages in furs, you know, with ropes dragging these 30-ton stones on rollers, it's just not going to happen. Because the River Avon would have been a lot broader. It would have been a lot deeper. That water table was a lot higher at that time.
Yeah.
They absolutely would have palleted, put it on a pallet and floated it down.
Yeah.
Down the river, you know, the Egyptians did that. Oh no, the Nile's a different thing to the River Avon as you see it today. I mean, it's impossible to believe, but the River Avon at Pusey, where they would have put it in, which is only a mile or so, most of it's downhill from westwards.
Anyway, so thanks for the tour of the roof.
Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time when the scaffolding goes up. I hope
we'll come back.
It'll be a really interesting project.
Definitely.
Because we're not actually right at the top, are we? We're just sort of halfway up.
We're halfway up.
The key was missing for the...
Yeah, we couldn't get up the tower today, but we'll be back.
So we're going to come back and do it.
So, yeah, thanks.
Great. Thanks for coming over.
I just love the... It was almost as though... I mean, we couldn't have planned it better when we just started talking to Andrew and the bells in the clock tower started to ring. And it was just perfect.
Yeah, I know. You know, he's still there as well, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, not right now, because I think they've broken up for Christmas. But
he'd be cold if he was up there now.
Yeah, I drove past a couple of days ago and I noticed the scaffolding still up on the tower where they've been fixing the clock.
Hmm.
And I messaged him the other day and he said that they were going to be back there in the new year until March. So we'll have to go back over and pay him a visit. So, the future. What are we going to do next year, then?
Yeah. Oh, God, no idea. No, I do. We've got quite a lot planned. I mean, I've got a number of walks, which I've said before, and I keep saying, oh, we're going to do this walk, that walk. What I tend to do is I plot walks on... I use the Ordnance Survey app, which is... You can use it on a desktop and a phone. So what I tend to do is I plot the walks on an Ordnance Survey map on my laptop. Because the bigger screen makes it a lot easier to see what you're doing, and you can plot them on there, and then I save them, and then I can see it on my phone. So when I'm walking around, and I can you know, check things as I walk. So I've got all these walks sort of saved on there, which only I can see at the moment. And when I actually come to do them, then I'll make them public. But we've got places like the Wilts and Dorset Canal over Wilts and Berkshire Canal. That's right, Wilson, Berkshire, over at starts just outside Chippenham and then heads over towards Laycock. And I think it was, might have been 2020, we went over there. And there was a whole load of restoration work being done on the canal. So it'd be interesting to go back and see how far they've got with that. But that looks to be like a really nice walk to do. And I've had a couple of suggestions for routes around there, which is really good. Aldbourne and Liddington Castle. Again, I've got another route plotted there. Just finding the right time, because there is a stretch of quite fast roads that you have to walk along. Although Steve Dixon, who we're going to talk about a bit in a minute, he knows that area very well. In fact, he's about to move back up there. He's moving from Devizes back up that part of the world, and he's suggested a way round walking along the road. So that's what I want to do, because that's just packed full of prehistory. It's just an amazing place. Tidcombe and Hip and Scoon Bottom, all around there. David Dawson wants to do a Wiltshire Museum walk around there. So those are, and I've got a couple of others which I've got sort of saved on the EOS maps. But I was thinking yesterday about... you know, where else haven't we been? We've pretty much been to a lot of the outer reaches of Wiltshire. So we've been right down in the south and southwest when we did sort of Verditch Chase and the area around there. Castle Combe, which is sort of not that far from Gloucestershire. It's in the Cotswolds, but it's still in Wiltshire. And then, of course, we went up, Stu and I went up to Inglesham, which is that little slither of Wiltshire that pushes into Oxfordshire and Gloucestershire. But it got me thinking, and I was looking at a map yesterday, the EOS map, and if you sort of zoom right out, so you've got a really big picture and see all the county boundaries. And I've never really thought about this very carefully. Is Swindon actually in Wiltshire? Because, of course, when they form these unitary authorities, they are two different unitary authorities. There's Wiltshire and there's Swindon, and they are both unitary authorities.
Yeah, I mean, technically, in terms of local government, I think Swindon's its own borough, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's not part of the Wiltshire in terms of local government, so their council tax goes... If you live there, you pay council tax to Swindon Borough, you don't pay to Wiltshire.
And, of course, the PCC elections, the Police and Crime Commissioner elections, the Police and Crime Commissioner is the PCC for Wiltshire and Swindon. So it's two different authorities.
But I think there's a difference between that local government arrangement and what's called the ceremonial county of Wiltshire. So Wiltshire does include... The ceremonial county includes Swindon.
Bugger it, because I was hoping we could just forget about Swindon. Never go there.
No, we can't. We've got to include Swindon. We're going to have to go there.
Oh, no.
We're going to upset all our Swindon listeners now.
Yeah. If any of them bother. No, I have nothing against Swindon itself. In fact, I haven't been into the centre of Swindon for about 30 years. I used to go there on business occasionally and go and visit. There was an office I used to go to right by the station. But so I used to get the train to Swindon, get off, go into the office, get back on the train and get out again. But it's just getting up there. It's such a long way. And, of course, you've got to get across the M4.
Yeah.
And that great big roundabout just outside Swindon, which is just a complete nightmare.
Yeah.
There's always roadworks there. Once you get through, I mean, what's the name of that town just up from Swindon? It's sort of up to the right. High something. We went through it on the way to Inglesham. But that looked like a really sort of pretty village. There's a lot of military up there because you're quite near to Shrivenham.
That's is it Highworth?
Highworth, yes, that's it. That looked quite nice.
And you've got Malmesbury as well, which has got quite a lot.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to say. So right over to the other side. So you're sort of Gloucestershire borders, but let's not forget that Malmesbury is in Wiltshire, and that's beautiful. I mean, I've been there a few times, and it's that sort of town centre is absolutely stunning. Of course, there's the grave there to somebody who was killed by a tiger in Wiltshire. I mean, who knew there were tigers in Wiltshire? We really need to go up there. But the other places I was thinking about was, south of Salisbury. So the border goes right down to Downton and right to the edge of the New Forest. And then you've got sort of East Dean and West Dean. You're sort of pushing over to the Hampshire border over that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that when I go down to Bournemouth, you sort of skirt in and out of Dorset and Wiltshire, because Tollard Royal, which is right on the border with Dorset, it is in Wiltshire.
Yeah,
and it's
that's
really
right.
Far south. It's below Shaftesbury.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's so much more that we could have a look in and explore.
But, so as we said earlier, if people have got any thoughts about where we should go, or they want to go themselves and write it up, then feel free and let us know, or go and take some photographs and get writing. I did just want to sort of mention, he feels like sort of the third member of the team. Well, he is the third member of the team, it's Steve Dixon. And, of course, we're trying to get a walk with him, which we're going to record as we do it. And we're still waiting for Steve to come back with a date. I mean, I don't know what I've got to do to get a date out of him. But as I said, he's going to be moving from Devizes at some point soon. But through the podcast and through, I think, your appearance on Radio Wiltshire, Radio Wiltshire contacted Steve and they did a programme about him. For whatever it was, 15 minutes or whatever, and they used a piece of it was all around one of his pieces, which is called Hills Hiding Hangers, which I love, absolutely love that. So they talked to Steve and they played that piece, and he's been asked to do some more work for Radio Wiltshire, writing music for them. So that's terrific news. So
yeah, that's great.
Well done, Steve, and as ever, really appreciate his contribution to the podcast.
Yeah, and that piece of music, Hill's Hiding Hangers, we've used in the forthcoming Hidden Wiltshire video.
Yes. God, it's almost like we planned that segue.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we have a video coming out, which was filmed late summer over by Alton Barnes and Alton Pryors and up on Milk Hill. And as part of that, we are doing, it's almost like it's not a podcast, it's a vidcast or whatever, a vlog.
Vlog,
hard to know what you call it.
Vlog.
But we're doing a video version of the podcast, effectively, with David Carson, who comes from Alton Barnes, and his family have farmed the land around Milk Hill since the 1880s, so he knows quite a lot. And yeah, we're going to try and get that out in January, all being well.
It's pretty much in the can, as we say in the business. But
yeah,
it's all filmed, isn't it?
Yes.
We've just got a bit of audio to tweak, and then we're pretty much there.
Yes. Yeah, and then we'll release that onto social media in due course. Mm. But I was really pleased with how that turned out, and it's actually really interesting. David's, his knowledge of the area is encyclopedic.
Yeah.
So, and it's great to be up on Adam's Grave and on top of Milk Hill, you know, talking to someone that has responsibility for the land.
Yeah.
As well, that's fantastic.
And he's great company, David, as well. He's very entertaining. Yes. And. He's always got a story about something. Yes.
Yeah, he's a great friend of Hidden Wiltshire, as David. He's been very generous with his time over the last
absolutely.
Year. Okay.
Yep, so...
Wrap up?
Yeah, I think next episode, no idea. Well, if we can get this walk, if we can get a blooming date out of Steve, and we can do this walk, then... I think we'll keep it quiet as to where we're going, but that'd be great, because then there'll be three of us to listen to.
Yeah.
And Steve is another one. He's like Tigger. You've not met him yet, have you?
No.
And he is like Tigger. He's so bouncy, and shutting him up will be the problem. so that, you know, if the stars are aligned, we might get that out for the next episode. I think possibly... Either so the next podcast, is that before year end or is it into next year?
Well, we'll record it before the end of the year, but it will go out on the 2nd of January.
Okay, so maybe this one is the last of the lower boots offers.
Yes.
And I, you know, as we've said many times before, I'll talk to Tim about what he wants to do next, but. Yeah, so if you go onto the lower .co, no, is it .co.uk or .com?
.co.uk.
Yeah, lower .co.uk website, if you fancy a pair of walking boots or shoes, and put in the code HW for Hidden Wiltshire 20, as in 20, HW20, you'll get a 20% discount. So this is your last chance.
Yes, make the most of it. Fantastic.
Good. And then get to the website, which I don't know if we've mentioned before, but we've got a book, and it's available from the website as well as Wiltshire Museum in Devizes.
Yes.
So order it on there, and we promise to put the right postage on, and you'll get them sometime.
Yeah. Or you can collect them. You can collect them from me or Paul. So we've got a few in stock. So yeah, you can either book one. Buy one online and get it delivered through the post, or you can collect it from Trowbridge or Shrewton, or you can buy one in Devizes from Wiltshire Museum Shop. If you have bought one, thank you. If you haven't bought one, I think you should, and I think you'll enjoy it. So we'll sign off for now. Wish everyone a fantastic Christmas.
Yeah, happy Christmas, everybody.
And all the best for the new year, and we will be back in the first weekend of January. Bye for now.
Ta-da.